and interact with it, and I'll explain that in just a couple minutes. If you are introverted like me, you do not have to talk. There's other ways to participate, and I'm really glad that you're here, and we'll get to that in a minute. But we're starting this new series, and as we do, I want to pray again and ask you to pray with me. Holy Spirit, would you let yourself be felt in here? As we take some deep breaths, would you remind us that you're near, that you're with us? Help us to not just think of information, but actually let some of this stuff in and make a difference in the way that we see ourselves, see the world, see you. Give me your words in that, please. Jesus, in your name, amen. Well, these last few years, there's been this decision-making matrix that we've been thinking through that was less common before. Might be a weird phrase for us, but we all have matrix that we decide things through, like what is my favorite fill in the blank? Maybe you're going out to eat after this, and a thing you might think through is, okay, what's my favorite place to eat? Or you might think of, what's the cheapest place? Or what's the healthiest place, right? We have all of these different ways that we make decisions, these different matrix that we think through. And these last few years, there's been one that we have worldwide been thinking through that is, what is essential, right? What and who are essential? And that's kind of a gross statement when you think about it. Who? Everybody should be essential, but that has not always been the case. Every job and profession has not been seen as essential. This word essential is no longer just for overnight bags and camping trips. We use this word for everything. And hopefully it starts to lead to some good change. Things like the workers who are essential. 2020 gave us a list, like an actual list that was posted. These are essential jobs, right? But now at least here in Louisville, I think we see things different. After the school year started, there's some new essential jobs. I think bus drivers and teachers and like the people who keep JCPS running, we realize the whole city is dependent on. UPS, Humana, they're very vested in students going to school so parents can go to work. Right? Like this is all one big system where it's not so easy to call people non-essential. Everyone is real essential. We're realizing how dependent we are on one another. I want to show you some headlines that came on my CNN app last night. Because this is the type of thing that causes us to start to see what matters, and in my faith, what's essential. And these are the types of things that start to bring some contradiction. This was just a screenshot, and it might be hard for you to read, so I'll read them for you. Screenshot of what fit on my phone. Three people dead after gunmen targeted black people in Jacksonville, Florida, officials say. And then a video from the sheriff. The next story is one teen killed, four people injured following shooting at Oklahoma high school football game. Next one is Denver police shoot suspect during hostage situation after alleged road rage shooting, chief says. Finally, at least seven people hurt in shooting that halted Boston parade, police say. That's just, you just open it up, top four things we see. And I hope we are at a place as people, as a church, as a society, to start to be, huh, what have we held on to that we should probably let go of? And what have we let go of that we probably need to hold on to? What's essential for us to be a place where people can know that they matter and there's God and goodness and healing and reconciliation and all those kind of things when this is what's leading the news? And granted, this is one news channel, one source. There's different people who highlight different things, but I don't care if any of them come up this way. We've got to reevaluate what really matters. What do we need for this journey ahead? What's essential to leave behind and take forward? This is values, relationships, ways we interact, ways we understand our past, our present, our future, and especially our faith. This redefining of what's essential and frankly the nervousness and loss of identity that happens at the same time is happening like all over the place. People are kind of drifting or letting go of things they once held on to, and then they're like, well, where do I fit? Who do I fit with? Who do I belong to? Because we kind of clump around shared lists, right? But I want you to know this is not the first time or the second time or the third time that people have looked at what's essential in their faith. This verse that we love in Micah 6:8 comes out of the question of what is God asking of us? People had a bunch of different understandings, and then it was boiled down. Jesus was asked about sacrifices, and he said, no, God doesn't want sacrifice. He wants this mercy from us. He was asked about the greatest commandments, and he distilled this giant list of commandments into something smaller. And then the church started to take form. It wasn't just Jesus who did this, but you read through Acts 11, where the church comes to a point of needing to define what's essential for us and what can we let go of. And it was a painful process. There are people who landed in different places. We see the teachings in Galatia. We see Paul's past in Philippians, where things were let go of and other things were picked up. It's something that happens throughout the church all the time. We have these gifts that sometimes don't feel like gifts, but gifts like the Nicene and the Apostles' Creed that form out of people saying, hey, what is this faith really about? What can we agree on? And these creeds came from that. These are people who've gone before us, who've distilled faith smaller and smaller. And I believe today, our wrestling with what's essential has something to do with how we understand the words belief and faith. So they're used interchangeably a lot, and that's okay. But there's two very distinct definitions that lead to vastly different spaces. So if you just go to like dictionary.com and you put in belief, it says an acceptance that a statement is true or that something exists. If you type in faith, it says complete trust or confidence in someone or something. So this belief, it's a feeling of security that we get either hidden behind or on top of these beliefs. We stack them on top so that we feel secure behind them or on top of them. If you remember last year, we had some milk crates up here. And we stacked the milk crates and talked about what happens when a belief is pulled out. You no longer believe it and it crumples down. Or when Pastor Terrell had all those books up here and you feel this obligation to all these beliefs. And if you are only living in belief defined this way, then you need to be correct and you need to have a lot of beliefs and a lot of correct beliefs. We start to see these lists in websites. We fight about these kinds of things. We make a lot of others and thems in this way because the goal is to be correct, to be right. And we have to be or we have nothing. So there's this author, Andrew Whitehead, who wrote a book called American Idolatry. And he found himself at a place of questioning his beliefs, the beliefs that he had kind of fortressed himself behind. And he says this, "These and other experiences began to raise questions in my mind. Can Christians in good conscience fight and kill other Christians if the nation we were born into by historical accident demand we do so? How could Christians send missionaries and soldiers to the same country? How could a loving God make room for Christians in a new nation through genocide? I would try to imagine Jesus, who I was taught was the perfect representation of God, acting in these ways, and I just couldn't see it." And so for him, these beliefs started to crumble, and he lost some of his community that he had agreed with in belief, and he had to find who he was again. Our experiences, our questions, they can't support these beliefs, and they come tumbling down, and we're a little unsure of what to do. But then there's that definition of faith. And if we can, just for a moment, sidestep the word complete, because that makes my eye twitch, right? I feel disqualified as soon as that word appears. But if we can address that in a second, then this faith is a trust or confidence in someone or something. This feels different. And the question becomes, who or what is this confidence in? And this really matters too. There's some essential work to be done here too, and there's some pain that has happened to maybe not us, but probably us, and definitely people that we love. Situations like when a pastor fails their church. The pastor isn't mature and harms people. The role of the pastor we lose confidence in, we lose faith in. But what follows? Do we continue to have confidence in God, or does that kind of crumble with it? When a church forgets who they are and becomes an insider movement, gossipy, harmful, we lose confidence in the church, but do we lose it in the larger church? What follows? When we have confidence that faith in God means that we will be protected in certain ways and then the opposite happens, what will we do? And how do we recover? When we see faith or belief in the Bible, it's one word there. We can use them interchangeably. You can talk about either. I'm not trying to correct our language, but it's really one root word there that talks about the reliability or trustworthiness of something, or to believe in the trustworthiness of someone. And that's Jesus. And if your faith feels like it's shaken at times, or it's been misplaced in other ways too, and now you're trying to collect it back up and have the courage to define what's essential, you're not the only one. There's this great story in Mark 9 where belief and faith are used interchangeably, but it definitely means this reliability of Jesus. It's the story of a father with a son who has epilepsy. And his seizures are so bad that he keeps falling into the fires and has had a dangerous life. They've just lived trying to protect this son from where he's going to fall. And Jesus says these words, that anything can be done for one who believes. And the father replies, I believe, but help me with my unbelief. I believe, but not completely, like dictionary.com says faith has to be. I believe theoretically that God can heal, that all these kind of things, but my experience is my son still falls in the fire. I believe that God is still good and all of these things, but my experience is my life has not been resolved and there's still suffering and there's anxiety and there's sleepless nights. That's true for this man with his son who has epilepsy. This is true for this pastor whose daughter has epilepsy. This is true for a lot of us. I believe, but help me with my unbelief. This is a beautifully honest prayer. It's probably one similar to what you've prayed. And I want you to know that our text shows that Jesus heard the Father. He didn't scold him or shame him. He met the dad right there in the midst of his belief and unbelief. And it's recorded for all time to see this dad wrestle on behalf of his son. It's a time in our church and our lives to choose what's essential, what beliefs, those statements we accept are true, are essential for this next chapter. What faith, this confidence in something or someone else for this journey is essential for going forward, for us individually. But then there's this idea of community, us as a whole. Community is usually formed over shared stacked belief, right? I believe these 12 things, and if you agree with me, then we're close, and if you don't, we'll fight about it, and I'll pray for you. until you agree with me. But this community has chosen a different way to form, and it causes some discomfort. Sometimes it makes us like, oh, are we okay? We've chosen a form of anyone who walks in, we're going to love. And we're going to talk about how we understand Jesus, but we're going to use the phrase of always becoming, understanding that we're always changing, we're always forming, that Jesus is bigger than we could imagine, and we don't have an obligation to have them all figured out, but that everyone belongs here. And that can be stretching, but I want us to continue pushing in. And I want to give you an example of somebody. I recently read these words by someone. She wrote, "After my parents' divorce, I eschewed the idea of a cruel, transactional God. Now I believe in a force greater than myself, not a deistic being per se, more like the idea that the universe might be organized around something like love." You don't know this person, but you could hypothetically walk in next Sunday, or someone may be in the room today who resonates with these words. And a real question is, are we a church who could journey with her? Are we a church who could not just journey with her and say, like, I'll pray for you until you get this right, but are we a church who could maybe even learn from her? Be actual community with her? Is our faith secure enough to journey besides people who express theirs differently? Well, I put this up because that's, for some of us, the idea of letting go of God and not necessarily a deistic being makes us like, I'm out, I'm terrified, right? But knowing this woman's journey, this is a beautiful choice that she's bringing into the next chapter. For me, this idea of the universe being organized around love sounds a lot more like Jesus than her experience before of a cruel, transactional God who just kept asking more and more and demanding more and more of her. I think Jesus is big enough, good enough to meet her in this space of cosmic love. I believe that as she journeys, she will be able to see Jesus' face shines on her and celebrates the love that she's discovering. And truthfully, I believe that if she came and journeyed with us, and if we're all vulnerable together, and if we all trusted the journey, I believe that's exactly what she'd find. And we would all grow and learn from one another. But it's a real question. Can we journey with each other? Or are there boundaries to this thing? No, I can't journey with her, or I can't journey with him, or I just can't. As I reflected on this week, I went to the end of John to remember words Jesus said towards the end of his life. He said, "As the Father has loved me, so I've loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will also abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I've said these things to you so that my joy may be in you, so that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." Well, we don't use the word abide very often, but here in this community we do talk about attaching or being in union with God or being connected to God, the very things we've been talking about in Philippians. What Jesus is saying here is that as the Father and Jesus were connected through love, we are invited to be connected in a similar way. We're to trust this connection to Jesus. We're to have faith in this connection, both the strength of the tether and the strength of the one we're connected to. And through this, we're to obey what Jesus commanded. And that brings up this whole giant list, right? Then we have to hide behind how great we are at obeying, but before we get there, he makes a statement that you love one another. That's what I'm commanding. Love one another as I've loved you. Several times, this is how Jesus summarizes obedience. Never ignoring the law, but summarizing it as love. And as we look towards what could define us together as a community, it makes sense to look here. Our beliefs and our faiths are different, and that's part of what has made this journey meaningful. Your experience of God is different than my experience of God. And your experience has taught me, informed me, and there's this beautiful thing that happens as we do that. And as we look forward, we get to choose what we want to name as essential. In his book, Faith After Doubt, Brian McLaren writes that everywhere he goes, he meets people asking the same question. Where can I find a faith community that welcomes doubters like me and my friends? A good place in which to raise children, a fellowship that helps us move forward toward faith expressing itself in love. And might that be a part of this next chapter for us? What is it that personally that you've held as beliefs that it's okay to let crumble? What is it that's essential for you to hold on to? And what does this faithfulness, this trusting in the tether you have to Jesus, what does that look like as we go forward? We're going to discuss these things in a couple minutes, but first I want to invite you to receive communion. Mr. Don is stepping up and grabbing communion. If you need some, go ahead and raise your hand. I've told you before, this is a moment that we have every week where I am reminded of God's faithfulness, of my experiences of God's faithfulness. I'm reminded of who Jesus is. And Don, they might be over there. I'm reminded of God's faithfulness, my experience of God's faithfulness. And that's what this is to be as we circle throughout the week and we go through our days to come back to, oh yeah, God has been faithful. And Jesus is exactly who he said he was. So we remember that on the night he was betrayed, he looked at his friends,